Hello, Falcoholics. What is up? Welcome to another episode of the Dirty Birds of Brews podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Knight at Falcohol Kevin, joined for the, not the first time, but for the first time as a member of the Falcoholic, Trayshawn Diaz. He's at Trey3Sean on the Twitter X, whatever you want to call it these days. Trayshawn, welcome back to the show. Welcome, of course, to the site. We're excited to have you, of course, and of course, excited to have you to talk about, you know, your wheelhouse. We got you for linebacker and special teams. We were talking before the show. I was like, I don't know who I'm going to get to do this episode. And you were just like, no, I want that. That's mine. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, excited to officially be here as a part of the Falcoholic team. And very excited to start talking about special teams and linebackers.
Yeah. You know, like you said, underappreciated groups throughout the NFL. So we're going to get into that. We're going to talk the off-ball guys. I know Trayshawn has some takes on some of the outside guys that could be factoring in here as well, so we'll get to that. Talk, of course, about Younghoe Koo's greatness. Talk about, I think, underrated Bradley Pinion as well, so we'll get into that. Great jam-packed episode for you guys as we continue our Falcons roster preview series. Before we dive in real quick, want to bring you a word from our sponsor, BetOnline. Folks, BetOnline is your number one source for all your sports betting needs this season, from baseball, golf, soccer, right up to all the top fights in the UFC, MMA, and boxing. I know hockey's over. I know basketball's over. The Hawks have made their number one overall pick, which was controversial according to Adnan. So, you know, you could definitely get Adnan's takes if you go watch last Wednesday's Falcoholic Live, but no matter what sport you're watching, BetOnline's got every stat, every matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. And when the game's over, you can head on over to BetOnline's new online casino, get in on those online games of blackjack or poker if that's your game, or you can unwind with one of their over 150 online slots. So what are you waiting for, folks? Head to that website today, BetOnline, to get in on the action. Just remember to use our promo code BELIEVE. That's BLEAV for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here. All right, so diving in to this linebacker group, it's actually a pretty interesting group. And I know last year, obviously, we saw Troy Andersen get hurt very early into the season. I think we were all expecting him to be a much bigger player. Thankfully, Nate Landman emerged from that and was able to sort of stake his claim to not only being healthy once again from his devastating college injury, but being an NFL caliber player, one of the best run defending linebackers in the NFL. Caden Ellis is still probably going to be a primary guy, but who do you want to start on with this group, Trayshawn? We got some depth guys in here as well.
Yeah, you know, let's kind of go to Nate. I think that's a great starting point. Our African prince there. You know, I think you said it best. Nate really stepped up last year, and he gave the defense something that I think we hadn't seen in such a long time. And it's something that's not really considered valuable, because essentially every inside linebacker should do this. But he was probably the most fundamentally sound run defender that we had last year. And you see the natural instincts. You can tell this guy has played inside linebacker dating all the way back to high school, which he has. Like, this has kind of been his MO. He can feel and see everything between the tackles, exactly how you want an NFL caliber linebacker too. I think athleticism is kind of really what holds Nate back. There's just some things that you physically can't overcome. And we started to see that kind of show up in the passing game. And again, Nate wasn't brought here to be that uber athlete linebacker that is playing three, sometimes four downs for you on a series. He was here to be a spot player, to come in, understand what he's supposed to do fundamentally, and execute. And he was able to do that, and then some last year. I think what was the bigger surprise to me was some of the just the instincts, the nose for the football. We see him pull out the peanut punch multiple times successfully last year. Those are the things you love to see that are, you know, really hard to come by. And, you know, fumbles and forced fumbles aren't, you know, stats that we look at as, you know, continuously building, or, you know, they're always going to happen. But you know that the effort is always going to be there, and that the chance of it happening is higher when Nate's playing.
Yeah, absolutely. And just such a pleasant surprise. He was someone that I and a lot of people have been talking about ever since he was picked up as a UDFA, is like, this guy was on track to be a day two pick. Like he was absolutely in that range because of his just, I mean, you go back and look at his college stats before his injury. I mean, he was on just an absurd pace. He was just stacking the stat sheet with just crazy tackle for loss, crazy tackle numbers, just doing everything you want, and has that devastating injury going into his draft season, unfortunately. And he became an undrafted free agent, and that's how it goes for some of these guys, especially off-ball linebackers, where teams are like, well, you're coming off a seasoning injury, off-ball linebackers just not that valuable, like, we're just not going to draft you. And I think it's pretty clear he could have, he should have probably been a day three pick at the least, even with the injury. But he comes in, it takes him a year to rehab the injury, doesn't really play much for the Falcons, sticks around, finally gets his opportunity, you know, definitely sticks around, makes the roster and all that stuff. Finally gets his opportunity and, of course, you know, starts to look healthier again and shows off that, yeah, this guy knows what he's doing out there. And, you know, are the Falcons going to be a team to use a ton of three linebacker sets? Probably not. It may look different. Like, Caden Ellis might just sort of rotate to be more of like an outside linebacker edge player. And then it's like, are you really playing three linebackers or are you playing, you know, two linebackers and an edge guy? It doesn't really matter. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see how they divvy up the snaps, because like you said, like the one thing Nate Landman can't really do is just like, he can play zone. Like he knows where he's supposed to be. He's smart in zone, but like, he's not gonna be able to play man coverage and chase down tight ends or running backs. He can cover an area. He knows where he's supposed to be. He can read the quarterback's eyes, all that stuff. He's got the mental side of the game absolutely on lock. It's just, he's not going to carry NFL athletes downfield. And we saw that taken advantage of sometimes when he had to be put out in coverage. So that's really the one weakness that he has, that he just needs to play more as more of a force player, run defender, that type of stuff. And that may sort of limit him to that third linebacker role, but man, you have to feel great about your linebacker depth when Landman's your third linebacker, where you could just, if you know you're going up against a heavy run team, you know, he could be your starter that game. But just having him in your back pocket, if you need more force up front, or if you just have an injury, that he's ready to go, it really bolsters the overall depth and just sort of skill set of this linebacking core.
Yeah, agreed. You know, when you talk about, you know, how are they going to play, how are they going to be used, I went back and looked at the Rams and was just interested to see kind of what Raheem did last year. And they had four inside linebackers rostered up for the year, and then you saw two of them were the two primary linebackers, which was Rosboom and Jones. And then you had Reader, who essentially came in and did spot duty, played around like 200 snaps or so, with Jones getting the bulk of those snaps and Rosboom then coming in right behind him. So I think, you know, ideally Landman's probably in that Reader spot there, taking up a good amount of snaps, but maybe not necessarily on the field all the time, because like you mentioned, there's not going to be many three linebacker sets, and there are going to be, I think, quite a bit of just one linebacker sets. You know, we haven't gotten into it yet, but we will talk about this penny front, who's going to be the linebacker in that penny front, things like that. So, you know, it's going to be really interesting to kind of see how the snaps fall out. But I think what you said was really stuck with me, which it feels like it's kind of different than how it's being looked at, but like Nate Landman being your linebacker three, or even switch it, Troy Anderson being your linebacker three and Leighton Manning being your linebacker two. These are good problems to have. Like that is a very nice group of linebackers there. Right now, I feel like, you know, we have an average group with that's their floor, but they have the ability to be considered good. And, you know, maybe by the end of the season, if certain guys take those next steps, and we can just talk about that guy now, Troy, then they could be seen as like, hey, this is like a top 15 group. Like, these guys have somebody that can sniff out the ball in the run game and Nate Landman and bring the force. You've got Troy Anderson with the uber athleticism, who is now able to carry those athletes like we talked about, and be able to stay out there in coverage. And then you've got Caden, who is the wild man that can do it all. He might be able to give you snaps out at Sam, keep you inside, things like that. So when we look at this group, I think that, you know, I think Caden is maybe the most important, but I think Troy is the guy who will have the biggest impact on how the group is going to fall out and how they're going to be as a unit moving forward. With Troy, you know, it is really a bummer with what happened last season. So, you know, his rookie year, I feel like people forget he didn't start until the back half of that season. He earned his snaps through special teams, and he was a very contributor on special teams, causing fumbles, making plays, always around the ball. And then they're saying, hey, you know, you now this is how you get your chance. And then we saw that first year. It was definitely a learning experience when he finally did get on the field. You saw a lot of good. And then you also saw a lot of instances where he's not necessarily seeing the field, or he doesn't necessarily have those instincts of guys that have played the position year over year, like Landman. Troy is technically only entering like his fourth year playing inside, third or fourth year, because he was an outside quarterback. He had him doing everything, but he's not played the position that much. He has the athleticism to kind of, you know, clean up some errors here and there. He's able to be a little bit more aggressive due to his speed and things like that. But I think this is the year that we really want to see it click, I think, especially in the pass coverage game. That, for me, is where I think Troy really is going to make his mark and be able to establish himself as a guy that can stay on the field, especially when we start looking at some of these more exotic fronts and everything like that. They need a guy who has the mental capacity to be able to go from being that weak side, strong side, to now you're just the middle and you have to operate the hook, curl, everything all on your own. And I think that, you know, we're talking about a former quarterback. You know, everything that we've seen from Troy shows that the work ethic is there. I think that this is the year that he can really take that jump, because I don't think this defense is necessarily throwing anything new at him or giving him anything he hasn't seen before. At this point, we're lucky that we had Dean Pease at the beginning, and Troy has familiarity now with that system. He had familiarity with Nielsen. I'm of the mindset that if Troy didn't get hurt, we probably see more of that multiple front usage that we were expecting last year, where 3-4, 4-3, everything is interchangeable. So I think this year, granted, playtime is always going to be the best thing to help the player learn, but I think that year of getting to sit again is going to help him, similarly to kind of how it helped Nate, where Nate was focusing on the physical aspect of getting his body back, getting ready. Troy focusing on that mental aspect. Yes, taking care of the body, but for him, it's really all about just getting those last parts of the game to click upstairs.
Yeah, I agree. And like, he did miss the whole year, and you hate that he lost those mental reps. Like you said, that's like getting out on the field and actually getting to do it. That's the best way to learn. It's the fastest way. But the tape study and the playbook study for a guy that has only played linebacker a few years, it was really the final 2 years of college that he played it. And then, you know, his first year in the NFL, and then last year missed a lot of time. So, you know, this year it's not something he's done a lot. So it's him getting to actually work the playbook and work on it. You guarantee that he was still heavily involved with the coaching staff during his rehab. You know, with it being an upper body injury, you can still go out and run. Like, you can go run, you can go take your mental reps, you can go do walkthroughs and all that stuff. You can't have any contact, but you know, you can go do work through stuff. And I guarantee he's been working hard on that stuff. Hopefully that time has allowed him to basically get the mental playbook down. And there's going to be some small changes this offseason too to it, but he should not have to think as much as he did as a rookie, because you could see it. It was like the wheels are turning. And then when the wheels hit, like when he finished that, he could just take off, or if he took a false step, it didn't matter as much for him, because his change of direction, his long speed, all that, just absolutely phenomenal. You know, one of his most famous special teams plays, he whiffs on the tackle and then chases the guy down to prevent a touchdown still. So it's like, oh, wow. Okay. I mean, that's just when you're that athletic, you can do a lot of things and get away with a lot of things that other players just simply can't. But I think he's absolutely a linchpin on the defense, where if he can be trusted to be the Mike linebacker, that allows Caden Ellis to do what he was probably signed to do, which is blitz a lot, especially in this defense where they're going to, I think people don't understand that, like, they drop an edge rusher in coverage, an outside linebacker. You know, in Los Angeles, they were dropping Michael Hoft like 35% of the time, which is a lot for Michael Hoft. I mean, my goodness, yeah. Like, he, that man's like almost 300 pounds. So, you know, I think Lorenzo Carter might be a little bit better suited to that. But, you know, if you're doing that, they weren't just sending three rushers. They were then doing a sim pressure, which means they were blitzing a linebacker, which is technically, I guess, not a blitz because you're only sending four guys. But whatever. Caden Ellis is going to be that guy. So they need, but Caden Ellis can only do that if they have another linebacker they can trust to handle the mic responsibilities. Otherwise, they'll need Caden to be the guy that's standing back there handling that stuff. So if Troy is ready, if he can do that, if he can handle all the coverage, all the other responsibilities of the mic linebacker, it will open up and sort of benefit Caden Ellis to do what he does best, which is to get after the quarterback. And I think it will just boost the whole defense tremendously to have. That was the one thing this team just really didn't have last year. They did not have someone who could. They didn't have a linebacker that was someone that could excel in coverage. They didn't have someone that could do man coverage against tight ends or running backs or follow those guys. And we saw teams take advantage of that. We also saw that they just didn't really have the juice to be an effective quarterback spy either. We saw those running quarterbacks. I'm trying to forget, you know, that Vikings game. as much as I can, you know, but they just didn't have the juice to get those guys on the ground when they did run. And that you look at Troy Andersen and his skill set, and it's like this guy is made for that. Like, he is literally made for that. He's slower than Lamar Jackson, but other than that, like, I mean, there's not many other quarterbacks that he is actually slower than in terms of long speed. So he's a former running quarterback himself, so he should know exactly what they're trying to do out there. So I think he's one of the, and last year I said it too, like, he was kind of the wild card on the defense. I think this year he is one of the most interesting players on the defense. One of the highest variants, certainly, where if he, but again, it's like, I feel like if he's not ready, he'll just be the third linebacker, and the Falcons linebacker core will be okay. It'll be fine. But if he is, like, ready and he, like, starts to get towards closer to his ceiling, then that's a huge bonus, because everyone talks about how linebackers are undervalued and they're just not that important and all that. But what do all the best NFL defenses have?
A great linebacker play.
A great middle linebacker. You know, you look at San Francisco, you look at the Ravens. You know, these teams have always prioritized getting that really good middle linebacker. And Troy Andersen, the reason he was taken with a high second round pick is because he has the potential to be that. And I hope he can get there, certainly. I think he's really exciting. So I hope we see it. I was so upset that we didn't get to see it last year. So
I know, I'm with you, but you know, and then kind of leading into the next guy that you brought up there, who would, I think, be the one to benefit the most from Troy's takeoff, like you said, would be Caden. Because then you get to a situation, you know, we talk about, you know, the pass rush, we're worried about it. Well, you know, talk about being in a place where, if Troy hits and you want to do something fun, different sim pressure, something like that, well, now you've got Caden on one side. You've got Ebiketie on another side. You can use Troy as that blitzer and drop Caden into coverage. You can do so many different things now if you have these guys all on the field together and they're all actually, you know, able to excel in those roles and hit their marks. And so Caden is somebody. Yeah, we didn't pay Caden Ellis $21 million to be a stand-up linebacker. you know, I know a lot of people have been on Terry, but I know Terry definitely did not pay that man to do that. He was brought here for his blitzing. And, you know, he did give, you know, I think what's interesting about Caden is he was really pushed into that inside role in New Orleans when Werner went down. Before he went down, Caden was kind of basically that third linebacker, just kind of coming in and playing where, you know, whoever needed the break, whoever needed the breather, Caden could go in and give you snaps at that position. And he showed, like, hey, like, you know, bottom line, I can be average for you at pretty much any off-ball spot. That is one that's extremely valuable. Mm-hmm. We saw that last year in that Troy went down, Caden had to be full-time stand-up, and it was no issue for him, and we really didn't, you know, suffer from his play there. Now, with him coming back, we only got to see it a few times, and we even got to see Troy be in that role where he gets to be a blitzer, because he is somebody who excels at the aspect of timing and hand usage at the point of attack when he comes off of those blitzes, and that's, like, the most important part when you are that linebacker who's put into those spots, because everything is about, you know, quickness and reaction time, and you're trying to beat the O lineman to their spot so that you can get to the sack and get the QB. And I think Caden showed that he's able to do that from the A gap, the B gap, C, and then so on. And if we're able to utilize him in a Sam role at times where he can play from the outside and give us some work there, or if we can put him back inside and it's him and Troy or him and Nate, he's going to, I think, really benefit from, you know, all of these guys around him taking that next step. I don't really, you know, when I'm not really worried about Caden, you know, going into next year. He's kind of one of the few players that I've pretty much already feel like I know what I'm going to get with you. And at this point, it feels like, you know, I'm kind of just going to get, it's only going to get better from here in terms of, you know, how much further you can take this defense and your teammates can take you. So yeah, you know, I think Caden really showed us he's somebody that I was a little bit, you know, I didn't love the contract at first, but I wasn't a true believer in his ability to be off ball inside at the amount of volume that he was last year. And he proved me wrong on that. And so, you know, looked at it, I'm like, okay, this is a contract for a legitimately versatile blitzing linebacker who can give you the play you need inside. And I think that, I think it was great for Troy to have him and Nate last year, because Troy needed to watch somebody play extremely fundamental sound run defense, trust your eyes, hit the gap when you see the light. And he was able to study Landman's film. And, you know, that, I mean, honestly, one of the best film watches last year for run defending linebackers. And then he needed to have the perspective of Caden, because he's going to be more like Caden in that he's going to be asked to do many things. And so having those two guys in the room, being able to work with them, I think that was something that, you know, that was a piece of value that Caden brought that I hadn't initially thought of, because he's a guy that worked himself up the roster. He's not a high draft pick, wasn't a very sought after player, and he was able to carve out his role. And you know, a lot of that had to come from him understanding mentally where he falls in into the system and how he can then, you know, best use himself, to help the team. And like, that's the kind of, you know, that's what we're going to need from Troy and the others here. So very happy, with Caden, and, you know, really hoping that, you know, I don't know if we'll get to his 7 sacks number again that he had. But I mean, man, if he can give us 4 or 6, anything like that, I mean, that, you know, we need every sack that we can get.
Yeah, that they do. And like, yeah, I mean, you mentioned it. Like, I remembered the other day when we were talking about it on live that Troy Anderson and Nate Landman were roommates last year. So, and they continued, I think they're continuing to be roommates this year. So it really is the perfect setup, you know, and I think it's ideal because they're both young players. But Nate Landman just has this wealth of experience basically playing the position since high school. You know, he and Troy can work all that stuff together and come up together. And, you know, we could be looking like potentially at those two. You know, we'll see if Caden Ellis gets another contract here. I mean, I think he's probably going to deserve it. But like, it could be that we see Landman and Troy Anderson as two, you know, of the three linebackers of the future for this team. And I think we all are certainly hoping for Troy Anderson and pulling for him. You can't love, like, not love Troy Anderson. I mean, like, the man is just, he's just a fun player and a fun guy to talk to. So there's no, you know, everyone should be pulling for Troy, but I think Caden Ellis, like, it's important that people know that he was an edge rusher in college. Like, that, if you wonder why he's such a good pass rusher, it's because he was a pass rusher in college. That's what he did. And he gets to New Orleans, and you know, he doesn't really have the measurables of an NFL pass rusher, like a full-time edge rusher. And he just was like, I'll play off ball. Yeah, sure, whatever. And just slowly works his way, gets an opportunity, proves that he can play off ball too. But really, like, what he is a hybrid off ball pass rusher. That's kind of a unique role. Not every team is going to have a spot for him. But I think if you actually unleash him as a pass rusher more frequently, you will see him be a higher level impact player. Like, he's adequate in coverage, he's a good run defender certainly, but like, where he really shines, where you're going to see that $7 million valuation, is getting him to rush the passer, where he just has a feel for it. He just knows what he's doing there. So I'm really excited to see him hopefully unleashed a little bit more in that aspect of the game. And ideally that could take some of the pressure off some of these other pass rushers. I know there was a couple of the outside linebackers that you were interested in touching on too. So we can get to some of those guys as well.
Yeah. So, you know, when we look at the outside guys here, and we're mainly thinking, you know, who's going to be asked to drop into coverage, who's going to be asked to do off ball duty work. And I think we're looking at Arnold Ebiketie, Braylon Trice, D'Angelo Malone, and Lorenzo Carter. I would say that those are probably the four where I think we could possibly see a little bit of coverage work, a little bit of asking to do more, be that dropper on those sim pressures. And so, I mean, that's what Arnold Ebiketie's role was when he was at Penn State. You know, he was that, you know, outside linebacker. And a lot of people were originally excited when he was drafted because it felt like it was such a great fit for the Pease scheme. Everybody said, yeah, Oh no, this is going to be good. Last year was very different. You know, we were in more of a 4-3 instead of a 3-4. And I think that some of that stuff is a little overblown in terms of, well, now that we're in a 4-3, like, this guy's cooked. He can't, you know, play in this system. And I think aspects of that are true, and that you could say that there's certain things about the 4-3 that make the edges roll a little bit more difficult for somebody with the measurables of Arnold Ebiketie. And I think a lot of that comes with setting the edge, having to play the run out there, which is why we saw Carter, who's got a little bit more length, a little bit more size. He was getting those snaps first, and then you would see Ebiketie come in on the pass rush roll. And, you know, I think with Arnold, it's one of those things where, you know, you want really good returns for your second round pick. But if Arnold is a guy that becomes essentially a pass rush mercenary, and he gets you 8 sacks, and if he can get you 8 sacks consistently, you know, that's production that you should be happy with when you look at his snap count. You can't just look at sacks alone. You need to look at the pressure rate. You need to look at how many times is he actually on the field. And, you know, for what it is right now, he has a, you know, solid sack rate, I think. And he's not really going to be asked to do anything, I think, that he can't do that's past him physically. Now, when we look at the guys where maybe that does become an issue, I do worry that Braylon is going to be a little stiff, especially to start, and having to drop if he's asked to drop or things like that. Same thing with Carter. I don't think many of us want to see Carter asked to drop or be in coverage a little bit. The wild card of this group, and it's really going to be interesting because, I mean, I don't think he's going to play inside, but who knows? He's somebody that I think that this coaching staff is going to be like, hey, we need to see what you can do everywhere. And that's D'Angelo Malone. We heard rumblings last year that he was getting off-ball linebacker work in practice, that they had kind of already started to want to develop those skills. And he, you know, he was kind of MIA last year, and, you know, like most of his rookie year. And this is a third round pick. So it's a good investment. It's a solid investment. You know, this isn't like kind of a fifth or sixth round. This is a day two guy that the team, those are picks and players you believe in that you think can be real contributors to the team. So I think D'Angelo Malone's going to get a lot of different opportunities here. And if anybody of that outside linebacker group was going to kind of get more coverage opportunities, like Ebiketie, he's the one I think that's most built for that. And I think it's really going to be his best opportunity. Like, if D'Angelo Malone wants to break onto the starting lineup or just kind of start getting, you know, snaps, getting play time, I think this is the best angle for him, is to show that he can do some of these other off-ball duties. But, you know, what do you think, you know, Kevin, out of that group? Is there anybody where you're kind of looking and, you know, you're really anticipating, you know, I think that this is really going to be the only guy that they ask to do that? Or do you think it's going to be committee work? Or, you know, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree with you on pretty much all those guys being involved. It's funny, like with Lorenzo Carter, that I believe, like, I think it was two or three seasons ago, he actually had the highest coverage grade of like any edge rusher. And I've just like touted that as like, he's the NFL's best coverage edge, you know, and that's like the most random stat. But like, and then last year his coverage grade wasn't that great. So it's like, you know, that could be just one of those things where it's like you have like 20 or 30 coverage snaps and it's just completely off kilter. But like, he's done it. And like, if you remember his RAS, I think at the time he was a 10, like he's one of those absurd athletes. So like theoretically, you know, he could do whatever you want. Yeah. He's a 10 at linebacker with his just absurd. Like he ran a 4.5 and jumped, you know, 10 foot 10 in the broad and all this craziness. He didn't do the three cone. So that would probably be the one that you'd really want to see for the coverage. But, you know, it's like, you hope that maybe I think he could be better than Michael Hawk, essentially.
Okay, yeah. I can get down with that.
Michael Hawk. Poor Michael Hawk, man. He was just like, whatever you want, coach, I'll do it. But, you know, I'm sure he'll be involved. And, like, I think they just really like, if Lorenzo Carter's on the roster, they have a role for him because he's not cheap. Like, he's making, you know, $4.5 million or whatever it is. So, like, if he's on this roster, they're going to have a role for him. And, you know, I think we could definitely see that it's Carter and Ebiketie playing the majority of snaps outside. I agree with you on Braylon Trice, too. I think he's going to have a similar role. He's a guy that, yeah, I think you probably don't want him dropping. That's just never really been his game. He's sort of that hair on fire, like, I'm going to go forward guy. You probably don't want him going backwards. That's just, he's only forward, you know. And then, you know, with D'Angelo Malone, I just can't quit, you know, Malone. I can't quit him. I was upset that he didn't play. Like last year. And I think he's good. Like he wasn't a good 4.3 edge rusher. He's never going to be that. That was never.
No,
but like, if you look at his measurables, he and Troy Anderson are very similar. Obviously Troy Anderson's just a one of one athlete, but, and
freaky in his own right. Like,
yeah, no, Malone's great athlete. Like that was never his issue. And then, like, he's bigger than Caden Ellis. But, like, you could see a similar path for Malone, like, to the Caden Ellis path, where he comes into the NFL as an edge rusher. But, like, it's like, oh, we're kind of, it's going to be tough to get you, like, full-time edge rusher snaps because you're small. But can you play off ball? We know he can play special teams. He had 6 special teams tackles last year. He played almost 80% of the total special team snaps. So like that will always help you stick around. Like if you can be a core special teamer, which he was, then it could work out for him that could be his path. But his path to the roster as a linebacker is just infinitely easier than it would be at edge or you know, because it's just the group is too crowded. Like they need to make room for Zach Harris, and they got to make room for Ebiketie and Carter and Trice. And they added James Smith Williams, who's going to be more of that hand in the dirt guy. You know, they apparently like Bradley and I. Like, it's like they got all these guys. Like, they're probably not going to have room to keep D'Angelo Malone as an edge rusher, but at linebacker, I mean, it's possible. Because all he has to do, you know, if they keep 4, obviously, he's probably not beating out JD Bertrand for that, just because Bertrand's a natural linebacker, but. If they keep 5, and a lot of teams do because that fifth linebacker is playing a lot of special teams,
mm-hmm.
you know, he's got to beat out Donovan Mouton and Milo Eifler. And it's like, no offense to those guys, but that's not necessarily the hardest task in the world. It's within the realm of possibility that he could win that competition. I think it's possible that the team might want a Caden Ellis backup that can play the same role, because at this point, you know, Troy Anderson can do anything. So maybe like that could be Troy Anderson in that case. But like, you're putting a lot on Troy Anderson's plate as it is, where you're like, we want you to be our full-time Mike that does like basically has the most important role in the linebacking core. So I think like you might just want to limit him to that. Like, just like, let's not do other stuff on top of that yet. So I think Malone could be that guy. Like that is the Caden Ellis backup. And does that mean he's going to make the roster? Does that mean, you know, I don't know, but I think at least practice squad, like, I think a lot of people have just written off Malone after last year where he played 2 defensive snaps, which that's obviously not great, but he played an absurd amount of special teams. He played 364 special team snaps, which is all, it's like 80% of the special team snaps. He played in all 17 games. He was active for all of them. So you know, that I think means that, like, they're like, man, we like this guy, but, like, oh, we just can't get him on the field on defense. So, yeah, I still have faith in D'Angelo Malone. I would like him to make the roster. It's a tough thing in terms of the roster math, but I like him, and I hope they can find a spot for him, because, again, it's a third-round pick. You would just hate to cut bait with that. Like, I mean, like, when he did play as a rookie, he played well. I mean, it wasn't like, oh, this guy's just crushing it, but, like, when he had to play edge, especially as a pass rusher, he had some pressures. Like, he did some stuff. Like, it wasn't like he was completely gone. I mean, I think he had 4 tackles for loss and two QB hits and a sack and, like, what, 200 snaps as a rookie?
Yeah,
like, that's not bad. Like, that's not bad at all. So I hope they can find a way to make it work. But
Yeah. I mean, we didn't really talk about him that much, but the rookie, I think I like what you said there, and I kind of see that. Especially when, you know, roster math, like you said, it's going to be really interesting to see how these position groups fill out, because we do have a couple of guys that are essentially tweeners as well, especially when we look at those end positions. Like you mentioned James Smith Williams, who I agree, I think his hand's going to be in the dirt most of the time. He still took 400 snaps outside the tackle last year. So I'm like, will they ask him to pull that hand up? Will they, like, what, you know, there's a lot of, interesting construction routes they have to go here. I think I like your, take there though, between, Malone and Bertrand, in that I think one of those guys is going to have to fill or figure out, you know, if they can be that versatile, kind of secondary player to come in and give a breather for Ellis or maybe even Anderson. You know, Bertrand was an interesting draft pick. He's a little bit undersized. I don't think for this defense or for what they'll probably ask him to do, but he's not the biggest guy. I think he's like almost 6'1". He's around 230. Very reminiscent of like a Dan Quinn linebacker. Mm-hmm. And so I think that he is somebody that they're going to hope can come in and do some of that coverage work. I think that's kind of what they're, you know, wanting to see from him. Or kind of what you said, you know, maybe they want to see if there's a little bit more untapped athleticism there. Could he compete for Caden Ellis' secondary role? Could he push Malone, you know, off the roster? I don't know about that. But like you said, you know, I think those two guys are definitely going to be not attached, but looked at very closely, because Bertrand's going to be expected to play a lot of special teams. Malone knows that if he wants to keep his spot on this roster, at the bare minimum, he needs to maintain his special teams play so that he can keep showing, you know, his value to the team, being like, hey, you know, might not be able to get on the field for defense as many snaps as you want me to, but I am one of your best special teams players. And we've seen some of the effects of losing Mike Ford, losing a couple of these special teams guys the past couple of years, where we had a great top 10 special teams unit at the start, I think, or year two of the Arthur Smith regime. And now we've kind of tumbled a little bit after we've lost some of those guys. So it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, who pushes who and who's going to be pulled into these roles where they're going to be asked to do a lot of different things behind the scenes.
Yeah, it's a fascinating group. And, you know, usually the rookie's going to get the nod, like, if it's close, right? So, like, you'd think, given how much they've talked up Bertrand, it's like, it seems unlikely they're going to cut him for Malone. But Malone's a third-round pick. It's like, you don't want to cut him either. So I wonder if they will find a way to keep 5 linebackers or something like that. And that's obviously assuming that, you know, that no one gets hurt, which of course we will assume, you know.
Right.
That's all we can do. Like, we're not in the business of predicting injuries. Obviously hope everyone stays healthy, but, you know, Malone is right there. Like, I think he's on the cusp where if a spot opens, he's probably making it in the linebacker room, but we'll have to see in camp, like, is he playing off ball more? Is he playing edge more? Like, cause if he's trapped with the third, fourth team playing edge, it's like, it's probably not going to happen. If he's playing some off ball, you know, it could be a lot more realistic. So I'm interested to see how that shakes out. And obviously we'll see how much Bertrand can move up the depth chart. You know, I don't think either of us know a whole lot about the two other linebackers they brought in Mouton and Milo Eifler. I've not watched them, but they've stuck around. Like, I think they were on the practice squad throughout the season and they stuck around and got futures contracts as well. So clearly they like him. You know, yeah. And I mean, we've seen it with Lim, and like, you can find decent to good linebacker play out there if you're careful about looking for it and you have guys that fit your scheme. But it's a tough task there. So we'll see who's going to shake out, but that's a competitive group, no question about it. And yeah, we'd be remiss if we didn't touch on the special teams, which
finally,
not as many. Yeah, I know. I was saving the best for last. So let's wax poetic about Young Weah-Koo. I mean, last season, like, I know he got a lot of flack last season. If you look at his overall stats, it was still a really good season. I mean, it wasn't like absolute peak Young Weah-Koo. He had a couple of key misses that like cost games, but overall, you know, so not his best season. But what did you think about Young Weah-Koo? Should anyone be concerned, or is it just, you know, one of those things?
Yeah, you know, it was interesting. I think washed allegations started to rise towards the end of the season, and I think it makes sense with some of, I think the timing of that makes sense. And there was also, I believe, a couple of moves preseason that made people think, oh, does Arthur Smith, does he really like Koo that much? Or are they trying to get him off the roster? We brought in some kicking competition and things like that. And so here's the thing. Like you said, overall, when you look at his season, not a terrible season. It was not up to his normal standard, which is why we're all a little bit disappointed, because he's set such a high standard for us. But zero back-to-back games with misses. So he never had back-to-back games with misses. And four of his misses came in the last five games. And those four happened in two games. So I understand why the conversation really picked up at the end, because it's like, whoa, we got to the final, you know, stretch of the season, and then we just all saw Koo miss four kicks, three of which were from 50. And I think that's kind of what started to worry people, is because they're like, whoa, hold on. He's like the best, you know, he's one of the best 50 plus territory kickers in the league. Last year, he went 3 for 6, 50%, which was his lowest mark of his career. But, you know, I think that we really do need to kind of look at his body of work. You know, he, from 40 to 49, he was still at 81.8, so about 82%, which is kind of, you know, still by his standards, lower. But I think the lowest in his career is about 77. So, and he was 100% from everything else, you know, less than 40. I don't think at this point we should be concerned. I think that, you know, it's unfortunate that the slump hit at the end of the season. You know, I think it's really one of those things where everybody was very upset at that point of the season. The last five games was not a joyous time for Falcons fans last year. So we're already a little upset. And then we're seeing, you know, essentially one of the players that people look at as one of the most reliable guys, and then we just watched him go out and miss, you know, four kicks at the end of the year, and we're all like, what is happening with this team right now? So I'm not worried about Koo for this next year. I think that it's going to be a good reset. I think that he is going to be fine. You know, these things happen with kickers. It's not always going to be, you know, a perfect season. They're not always going to keep continuing to bolster their efficiency rates. And, you know, this is, you know, one of the things that makes kicking the most difficult aspects of the game. So I'm not too concerned. And I think that we just need to give it some time. I think that, you know, this year we'll see Koo, especially from that 50 plus range, I think, be in a good opportunity. I will say one thing I liked about last year is that it was outside of 2019, which I don't really count that year of his career that much, because he basically was signed late, kind of whatever, partial stat season, things like that. That was the least amount of times he was asked to kick from 50. And so I think that was, in my view, that's kind of a positive thing, because, you know, there's a point there where I think he had a season with 13 kicks at the 50 plus mark. And
yeah,
then
2022
was
11, I think.
Yeah. Okay. Kicks. So 11, yeah. And then 8. And then, I mean, once you hit double digit numbers for those 50, I mean, that means your drives are stalling out. That means that you're not actually getting the ball into a better, you know, position or territory. And so, you know, the way I looked at it was, you know, he kind of forgot, you know, he wasn't using,
he was out of practice.
He wasn't in the zone of kicking from 50 like he had been for the past couple of years, and he had a little bit of rust on it. But, you know, I think he's going to be all right.
Yeah. I mean, some, and I remember some of those were like absurdly long. Like one of the ones he missed, I think was like, it was like a 59er. It was something 59er. Crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like, come
and
on.
It's like, okay, like, it, but like, you don't expect a kicker to make that. I mean, maybe Justin Tucker, you expect, right? But like,
yeah.
You, but like, at one point during the season, Koo had like surpassed the record for most accurate kicker, like, and he had taken over. So it's like, and then people are like, oh, he's washed. It's like, I don't know about that. But it kicking is just one of those things. Like, it ebbs and flows. But I think a key stat that you mentioned was he didn't like go on a slump. I mean, at the end of the season, he kind of did, but it was not like he missed and then that shattered his confidence. Then he started missing every game. It's like, no. And, you know, I think with Koo, he's in a good place. You have a good kicker. You don't mess with it. Like, you just, you let it ride. And, you know, it's funny that like a down year for Younghoe Koo is his 86.5%, you know, field goal rate, which is like still really good. But when you're used to like, you know, 95% in 2020 or whatever it was, something absolutely absurd. You know, it's just, you look around the NFL and see teams having kicking problems. And I think we're just really far off kicking problems with Koo. So, hopefully he'll have a quote unquote bounce back year, you know, and just, I'm not concerned either. I agree with you there. And then punting, I don't know what it is about people in Bradley Pinion, but this man just gets so much hate. I don't really understand it. I know, you know, this is your wheelhouse. So what do you think about Pinion?
Yeah, you know, weirdly underappreciated. Year one, he was like, his first year with us, he was PFF's like number one punter.
Yeah.
Like, right off the back, this is somebody that was signed off of a practice squad.
Yeah.
And I mean, he came in and he gave us an all pro punter season his first season. I think last year, a lot of the problems or things that didn't go right on special teams had to do with the other 10 players and not necessarily the specialists. We had some youth that was injected and playing special teams kind of for the first time in some new roles. We lost, I think, you know, that year. I mean, going into it, so you had Felipe Franks was gone. That was a heavy special teams contributor. Mike Ford, gone, heavy special teams contributor. One of the best special teamers in the entire league. He tore it up for Cleveland on special teams as well. And, you know, we then saw a couple of other linemen that had been kind of mainstays that were on in the depth chart that had kind of gone out. So you had a lot of turnover there. And I think that guys just weren't necessarily executing as well as they had previously. When I look at, like, you know, I think Pinion was still a top 10 punter last year. I know he was, at least by, you know, PFF standards, but there's so many other aspects to his game. He only had 11 of his kicks were returned last year.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
75 punts.
Yeah. In half. I don't even realize that, but he was going from getting 20 plus returned on him year over year. And then he literally cut it in half last year, only had it down to 11.
Yeah.
I think, you know, punters are never really, I think, appreciated regardless. I think there's only been a few in history that people think of, and they like that they just have, you know, like Thomas Morstead, guys like that, who just have that cachet at the punter position. And, you know, everybody's just like, oh yeah, that's a great punter. And I do think that, you know, Pinion is somebody similar to our boy Matt, who is just a little underappreciated. And, you know, I don't know if Pinion's going to have to clothesline somebody like Bosher did to start getting some respect around here, but, you know, that might be what it comes to.
Right. I mean, yeah. And it's funny because, like, he's huge. Also, he's like 6'5", 300,
man.
So like this, he's like a linebacker on coverage too. Like, so it's just like, oh my God, like people don't realize he's huge, which is always nice to have that size out there. So you don't just get, I mean, Bosher didn't need it. Obviously Bosher just had, he had the moxie. He didn't need the size, but like you look at the stats and it's like, I mean, the thing about punting is like, nobody likes to punt. So it's like, oh, I don't want to see the punter, you know, whatever. But like, you know, like he he punted way more this year than last year, which is a pretty big indictment of Arthur Smith. He had 75 punts in 2023, which is not great. He had his highest career yards per punt last year too, 47 yards per punt. The net was about the same as his, you know, number one punting season last year. I think in 2022 it was 41.2. Last year it was 41.1. You know, same thing. Yeah. And just like, I mean, he had more kicks inside the 20 last year than he did the previous year, 27. Didn't have a punt. He's only had one punt blocked in his entire career. He's good at that. So, you know, I think he's just underappreciated. And I have, like, it's like, just don't mess with a good thing. And the Falcons aren't, like, they didn't bring in another punter. You pretty much always bring in another kicker. I think people, like, need to understand that, like, you want a camp leg. Like, you don't necessarily want Koo kicking every single thing in camp. It's just not necessary. Like, if you've got an established kicker, you know, you don't need it. And Ryan Sanborn's like the guy. He can punt. He can kick. He's done it all in his career. He can be the guy to do it. And it's always nice to have a backup, like someone in-house that you can put on the practice squad that can be your emergency fill-in if you need someone to come in. There's not a competition going on. I know some people are like, oh, is Pinion going to be pushed by Ryan Sanborn? Is Coogan? No. But, you know, at a certain point, you know, maybe the team looks to, like, cut some cap at punter or kicker, like, in the future when they're going all in and stuff like that. But to me, it's like the savings is just not worth it. Like, I would rather have the established guys, but teams sometimes do that. It doesn't usually work out for them.
No.
So, but we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the Highlander, Liam McCullough, who has officially gotten re-signed. Great story there for McCullough, who looked like he was going to once again just be denied an opportunity because the Falcons, like, signed a veteran long snapper, went after Josh Harris left. Shout out to Josh, friend of the show, Josh Harris. And then, you know, unfortunately for the other guy, the veteran gets hurt, like, immediately, and then McCullough's the guy. And what do you know? He's a good long snapper. So I'm happy for him. I think he's been rock solid. You got any Liam McCullough takes as well?
No, you know, he's come in. He's done everything that you needed a long snapper, and that's essentially disappear into the roster. You know, what has helped Liam stand out, I think, with fans is obviously his personality that we see in those videos. One of the more interesting characters, I think, on the roster. Yeah. Always dropping some fascinating facts around training camp time. So it'll be exciting to see what he has for us this year. But yeah, no, not much to be said there. I think, and you know, you might be leading into this, but I was going to ask you and kind of see, you know, with these new rules, one, we've got about five returners we just signed. Mm-hmm. But with these new rules of the specialist group, who do you kind of see taking on some of those kickoff duties and some of those roles like that with these rule changes?
Right. I mean, it's fascinating, because, you know, Cordarrelle Patterson exits, to reunite with Arthur Smith. But it's, you know, Avery Williams, you obviously hope that he's healthy because what we saw from Williams, in 2022 was really good punt returning. Like, wow, this guy is incredible. Like, I mean, highest punt return average in the NFL that season. And then you saw what happened without Avery Williams. Like, you know, Mike Hughes is like not even an average, which is bizarre because Mike Hughes in college, UCF legend Mike Hughes, like, he was an elite college returner. It just didn't translate to the NFL. And I think the Falcons thought he would be a fine backup for Avery Williams. That didn't end up working out. And he was not. They ended up having to put D. Alford back there. And D. Alford was like average, which is fine for your backup returner. But then the Falcons were like, all right, these rules are changing. We can't just, like, have one good returner anymore. We need to have two. And I think they do have two now. Like, I think Avery Williams and Ray McLeod are the guys. I think both have shown that they're capable returners in terms of kickoffs and punts. I think McLeod has been more kickoff focused in his career. Williams has been more punt focused. So that might be how they divvy it up. I'm interested to see if they have multiple guys back, like if they have both back for kickoffs. You know, we haven't really seen that. I'm sure in the preseason that'll be really interesting to see how this actually NFL teams sort of attack it. But yeah, to me, I circle, you know, Avery Williams and Ray McLeod as the guys that are probably going to get the first crack at it. But, you know, you never know. Other guys could emerge, right? And, you know, if the return game is that important, do we see like Bijan get opportunities? You know, like if you're scoring, like, nah. I mean, it could be something where it's like, maybe it's not that high risk of a play anymore if they're not just running full speed downfield, like at the same rate and all that stuff. So I'm curious. Yeah. I mean, Bijan might factor in, I guess, is what I'm saying. And we know that like Mooney's fast. Yeah, Rondale Moore, you know, these are all guys that I'm interested in. But yeah, you got Isaiah Wooden, if he ends up surprising. I mean, he's definitely someone to watch too. So yeah, who are you looking at this point?
Yeah, you know, I think when it comes to punt return, I think it's going to definitely be Avery Williams and Ray McLeod as your first two that you're looking at there. I do think that we will see a good amount of Rondale Moore. I do think we'll see Wooden as well. Kind of used on those kickoff opportunities. Kickoff is going to be very interesting. You mentioned Bijan, but I'm even thinking like, well, why not Algier? Why not McLean? Because it's never always been about pure long speed or anything like that. But the return game now, especially when you talk about having to kind of read the field, the way that guys are going to have to approach returning is going to be very different than before. You're going to have, I think, more of an emphasis on vision and understanding how blocks develop and everything like that. Because that's, in my opinion, what the rules are basically setting up this new kickoff format to be, is to essentially be a more long developing run play. And I think that then kind of helps guys with, you know, skill sets similar to Tyler and Jace, in that, hey man, these guys can break two tackles and they might not house it on you, but if Tyler Algier can break two tackles at the 15 or the 20 and then go off for another 20 yards, I mean, now you're talking about starting with the ball at the 40, the 50 consistently every time. You know, we have a deep running back room at this point. So it's, you know, it's when you have as many running backs, I think, as we do, that are playable and have, you know, kind of these very, you know, return friendly skill sets in terms of vision, tackle breaking, I think we're definitely going to start to see these guys get looks. I'm with you in that. I don't necessarily think that these are, you know, the same level of, I think, you know, injury risk as before, where everybody's running 100 miles per hour at each other. And, you know, the returner's basically just Jon Snow in the middle holding his sword, waiting for everybody before he can finally take off and do what he has to do. So I think that the return game is going to be very, very interesting to watch. It's going to be a really deep battle. I'm very happy that we're not relying on, you know, two cornerbacks that needed to play cornerback last year. We really, you know, it was a bummer to see Alford get pulled off and kind of start to lose a little bit of snaps. And
that was,
you know,
not worth it, for the record. That was not worth it.
No, we all, you know, we all don't feel like those two plays of punt return should have somehow buried him on that depth chart. And, you know, I don't think we'll have that issue happen again.
It seems
again,
like they figured that out, thankfully. Yeah.
Seems like they got that taken care of. But yeah, you know, I think it'll be really interesting to see if it's Pinion that keeps carrying those kickoff duties, or if now that having the strong leg isn't necessarily the only way to approach kickoff, if they do look at Ku for squib kicks and things like that, because Younghoe Koo has an amazing, I don't know if they're still up, had an amazing YouTube reel of him just doing trick shot after trick shot.
Yeah.
And so I'm sitting here thinking, like, this guy literally used to just post highlights of him squibbing and all these other things. And so you've kind of opened the door to, you know, the value that the kickers and specialists will bring, you know, to the team. And, you know, we're very fortunate to have two guys who are excellent specialists and can do, you know, a variety of different kind of kicking for you. Whereas other teams, you know, you've kind of seen this offseason having to do unique approaches, looking at other guys on the roster, like the Chiefs are seriously considering and things like that. So, you know, I feel like we're in a really good place with the kickers that we have these rule changes didn't really hit us as hard as I think they could have or have for other teams.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the Falcons are well positioned for it. And I like the emphasis on special teams. I think Marquise Williams, you know, I'm really glad they kept him because I think this is a guy that's always sort of caped for his special teams guys. Like, look, we need special teams. Like, it's important. We're going to make sure we have specialists. Like, we're going to have guys at the back of our roster that are good special teamers. Like, you know, Kadarrell Hodge, like, I mean, he stuck around, I think, in large part to Marquise Williams, like being like, look, this guy is a core piece of our special teams. And Kadarrell Hodge is a fine wide receiver, too. I mean, we saw him, he could play inside, he could play outside. Like, he could be your five or six wide receiver and play. Is he Kyle Pitts or like Drake London? No, but like, he's your fifth receiver. Like, he could go out there and play wherever you need him to. And, you know, I obviously, you know, we lose Mike Ford and that sort of thing, but Mike Hughes is a decent special teamer too. And, you know, we'll see who else emerges, but like, I think the move to put D'Angelo Williams on special teams was really smart. He has been an impact player there. You know, JD Bertrand is probably going to get snaps there. I mean, will they still use Troy Anderson on special teams now? I mean, if he's a full-time starter, maybe not. He's just so good, it's hard to take him off, but you know,
maybe a returner, maybe another returner in the mix there for kickoff.
Why not? He could do anything. He played running back and played running quarterback. I mean, he could be. Troy Anderson is just going to play both ways. He's going to be Travis Hunter in the NFL or something like that. But it's fun. Like, I'm glad they changed the kickoff rules because it was basically like not even a part of the game. It was sad to see Cordarrelle Patterson get like two opportunities like all year to return a kick. So I'm glad it's more of a part of the game again. And I'm also glad that it's safer. Like, theoretically, I mean, we'll have to see what the stats are after this year, but like, nobody wants to see players getting hurt, but they don't want to see the game eliminate core parts like the kicks. Like, that's, we shouldn't be getting rid of it. We should be tweaking it to make it more interesting, more impactful while making it safer. And I think how they're handling the kickoffs, I think could be a peek into like how you do that. You don't eliminate it, you just change it. And thanks to the UFL for being like, we're going to show you that this can work. And then the NFL being like, okay, we've seen it can work. Let's do it. So, but yeah, I'm excited to see it. I think that's going to be one of the more interesting things to watch in the preseason is how NFL teams try to attack this stuff. Cause it's cutting edge stuff. Like, we've never seen teams do it really in the NFL. So.
Yeah. I mean, it's a big change, you know, it's very different than the changes on kickoff of the past, like the elimination of the wedge, the starting point of the starting point of the kickoff defenders and everything like that, when you can move everything. So it's like you said, it's going to be one of the biggest, I think, changes that we see, and preseason rollouts definitely going to be fun just to kind of see how people, you know, start attacking it. And then, you know, how many people are holding their cards a little close to their vest too, just to kind of see, you know, if anybody's getting sneaky. You know, we've heard rumblings about Justin Fields maybe making an appearance, and you know what, he's got, you know, the coaching staff that I 100% believe would do it. So, you know, it's going to be fun to watch. Not too excited about the changes. I'm a little bit of a purist, but
yeah.
You know, I agree with you. The kickoff, it wasn't in a place at this stage, I think, in the game where, you know, it's having the effect that you want it to have. If you truly want special teams to keep the moniker of, you know, being a third of the game, then you have to make it more involved. You have to make it a, you know, I think not just more exciting from a viewer standpoint, but you need to add that pressure onto the players and onto the in-game action itself. And this is definitely going to do that.
Yeah. I'm excited to see it. I mean, I hope they stick the landing and it actually is like great. But you know, I think it's going to be fun to see at least how it turns out, and hopefully it won't be a disaster, because you know, nobody wants a disaster. We want it to be fun. We want it to be good. Everybody wants it to be good. So not rooting on the downfall or anything like that, but Trayshawn, I don't think anyone else could have taken the linebacker and special teams episode over an hour. And I think it was a good hour too. Like, we weren't struggling to fill, you know, any kind of time here, but I appreciate the in-depth analysis. I appreciate the special teams love. He is Trayshawn Diaz at Trey3Sean. And welcome of course to the site. Excited to have you here, and we'll definitely be hearing from you more often, I'm sure. Anything else you're working on you want to let the people know about?
Now, you know, thanks, you know, again, really excited to be here and part of the Falcoholic team and contributing and, you know, working on different articles and things like that for you guys. Still over at Sporting News as well. Still going to be continuing to put out work there too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, check us out over there. Savion's building a great team and is really running a good ship. So just, you know, excited to have more opportunities to talk ball with great people. So, yeah.
Excellent. Yeah, definitely check out Sporting News as well. Savion, another friend of the show. So I'm sure we'll get his take here coming up soon, too, on this season. Guys, I'm Kevin Knight of Falcoholic. Kevin, thanks for turning into Dirty Birds and Brews. Leave that 5-star review on your podcast platform of choice. Please like, subscribe, check out the Patreon and the channel memberships. We're going to be firing up those Falcoholic Fantasy Leagues as we get closer to training camp. So to keep an eye out for those. We will have more announcements on that coming soon as we get geared up here for training camp. It's coming. It'll be here before you know it. So excited to get into that. So guys, thank you so much for joining us. We will see you next time on Dirty Birds and Brews. Have a great day, folks.